Good Ann Bulger, collector. I'll be speaking to Fred Benedict, a member of the Old German Baptist Church of Covington, Ohio. Speaking to him at his home on Panther Creek Road. June 10th, 1976.
Well, the first thing I'd like to know is as much as you know about your own personal family history, where your parents were born and raised and where your grandparents were born and raised, and anything that you might know.
Well, my parents and grandparents were born and raised at Waynesboro, Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
And that's where I was born and raised till I was 20 years old. And then I came out west, and my mother came from Indiana, around Anderson, Indiana. And so I have aunts and uncles there, and I came out in 1949 and began working for my uncle there. Now you wanted to know more about my parents or grandparents?
Do you know, have you traced back further to perhaps people in Germany?
Well, there's a genealogy of Alexander Mack and descendants. And Alexander Mack was a prominent leader in the church. He hardly was a founder because there was eight people who agreed together and covenanted together to form the church. But he was the most prominent leader and a minister. And his granddaughter married my grandfather. Her not grandfather, it had been about a great-grandfather, I believe. And so I do have genealogy back through her. She married a Benedict. And then on back to her grandfather, which was Alexander Mack, I have that genealogy.
So that goes really far back about...
Yeah, so the Benedict, though, that married Nancy Mack, we don't have history on the Benedicts back beyond them, except they were from the Presbyterian Church, I think I heard my father say. And then when this Benedict married into the Mack family, why, he joined the Brethren. And there was a lot of boys then in their family. So the community I came from, Pennsylvania, has plenty of Benedicts around. And some are second, third cousin, and fourth cousin to me.
Have any of them now moved to California, or have most of them stayed around there? Or?
I have several aunts. I have a cousin that moved there, and then two aunts that went out to California. And then I have some second cousins that have gone out in more recent years. I've never been there to visit. I'd like to go sometime.
You said that you first moved away and went to Indiana when you were 20.
Yes, I went there, and then I associated with the young people in both Indiana and Ohio, and met my wife here in this area. She was from this area, and then...
what was her maiden name?
Bowman.
Oh.
She was a cousin to Carl that you met.
Right.
And so we have lived in both states since our married life. We lived about 10 years in Indiana altogether, and our married life began in 1952. And for the rest of the time we lived out here. I spent 2 years in 1W service, that's in place of the military service. Mm-hmm. I worked in Indianapolis for those 2 years.
In a hospital? Or?
Yes, in a hospital, the Methodist Hospital in Indianapolis.
And so what year did you move here then?
Well, I lived out here a year. Then we were married and lived 3 years as a farmhand. I worked as a farmhand in Indiana. Then we served 2 years as 1W work, as a CO, and then we were out here again. I began the printing trade. First I went to printing school. Then I began the printing trade and was here about a year and a half, or a little more. Then we spent 9 years back in Indiana, and now since 1970 we've lived out here. So we've did a lot of moving, but
yeah.
We think this may be the last move.
Got a nice place out here.
Her family is right around here. And, of course, my mother's family then is in Indiana. We have lots of friends and relations there.
Uh-huh. And how old were you both when you got married?
Well, I was 22 and she was 20.
Uh-huh. How many children do you have?
We have four.
Four children.
Two of them are married now and live at Roanoke, Virginia.
Is there a fairly big congregation of brethren out there?
Yes, there's four in the vicinity down there. The boy lives in the one congregation and the girl lives in another. Each on the different sides of Roanoke.
They both married within the faith?
Yes. The girl was just baptized last Saturday.
Oh.
And we went down that weekend.
Oh, that's nice.
Our children usually join in their late teens or early 20s. And both of ours were at least 20 before they decided to make a profession.
Uh-huh. Has it, in recent years, has it been common for children to want to marry outside the faith, or has that not been very
well?
Much of
yes,
that?
Although we've always had some of that. There's been more opportunity for that as the boys face the draft and have to take up alternative service. And when they get out away from home, why they meet nurses and other people in other communities where they live and work that aren't connected with the church. And usually then they'll marry and bring them back home. And in a number of cases, they'll join the church too. Not always. But there's more than what would be years ago for that. Although we always have had men and girls who marry their schoolmates.
What about, do you have a fair amount of people coming in who weren't raised in the faith and who perhaps in their late, in their 20s or something decide to
In some communities we do. We have, at Covington here, we have more than some districts, some churches, and I don't know why that would be unless it's because our Covington church is a larger one. Maybe we notice it more that way. But then almost everywhere I know of couples that one or sometimes both are not had no connection with the church before, and they maybe they become acquainted with young people when they were in school, or maybe in a few cases I know where they're were just dissatisfied and were seeking for something else, and they happen to come across our people and they it was what they wanted. And some of those cases then don't stable. They have changed their mind, but yet most of them they do. They stay with our church, but some don't.
Now you've traced your ancestry back to Alexander Mack, who's very famous in the church. And, therefore, you're pretty sure your ancestors came from Germany, then Alexander Mack came from.
Although the Benedict is a French name. My father says in Quebec, he finds in the phone book many pages of Benedicts. So we don't know. They were a Presbyterian, it could be. The Benedicts came from France. That was, but then, of course, through the... And then on my mother's side, her name was Stoner, and that's a German name, so I guess I have more German than I do French. Or
do you ever remember your grandparents or anybody speaking German?
No, none of my relation. I have no friends around that speaks German, but German had pretty well passed by the time I come along in 1930.
Mm-hmm. Well, did the church ever, in America, did the church ever speak German? Did they preach in German?
Oh, yes. They used German altogether up to probably 1830, 1840. Mm-hmm. Right in there is where they began changing some of the ministers, including Peter Nee, John Klein, and a number of others. Eight or ten could preach in both languages. But then they began electing young men who knew only the English, and so then the German fell by the way. Our people didn't seem to make an issue of it like the Amish and others. I don't know why. I've been wondering. I'm trying to find some reasons why we changed so easily from the German to the English. There was a few of the older ones that wrote that deplored the fact of the German being lost. But we didn't have any problem like some of the plainer people did.
Right. The other, I don't know if you call them denominations, of the plain people, the Amish, mm-hmm. and the Mennonites and the Moravians.
The
Do you know if any of your ancestors were ever part of those?
No, I don't believe so. mm-hmm. As far as I know, why they were German Baptists, or before they joined with the German Baptists or the Brethren, why they may have been with larger denominations, but I don't know of any of my relation who were with other plain people.
Mm-hmm. What is the difference between, say, a Moravian and a German Baptist? Are there several, not only lifestyle differences as well as religious differences, or are they pretty minor?
Well, I would say in the beginning of the Moravians, that I'm able to understand, there was a lot more similarities than there is today. Today, why, I think they're pretty much like other denominations, and probably have left some of their distinctive practices and also their understanding of the Bible. Some, I imagine, has been modified by schools and things like that more than more than we have.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Amish are probably the most conservative of the plain people as far as...
Well, unless you would want to talk about the Hutterites. Now,
what are the Hutterites?
Well, the Hutterites are a group of Baptists who follow Jacob Hutter. And he, in the beginning, taught communism. And they live today, they're all in America and Canada, and they live in the Dakotas and Montana, and one church in the state of Washington, and quite a few of the churches are in Canada. They came to the United States because of persecution. They left other countries because they didn't want to serve in the military, and they came to the United States. And in the First World War, why, they were, they met stiff opposition here to their conscientious objector position. So a lot of them, in fact, the most of them moved to Canada. Then since the World War I, why, they've been moving back into the United States. And I suppose there's more in Canada today than in the United States, but it's growing pretty
Are
large.
Are they from Germany also?
Yes, I guess they call them the Tyrol. It must be a part of Germany or somewhere in that vicinity. And they speak a Tyrolese, they call it, type of German. It's different than the Pennsylvania Dutch. And I have an uncle down here by New Lebanon that speaks the German. And he when he was growing up, he knew the Dutch,
Pennsylvania Dutch.
And he's visited with Hutterites a couple times, and he can understand them, although he says he knows they have a different accent. It's a Tyrolese.
But it's pretty much German. Mm-hmm. You could probably follow
yes.
it.
Yeah, they can understand him all right.
Do you think they're about the most conservative?
Well, they, because of their community life, of having all things in common, why, they are pretty much separated from everybody else, and that way they've kept everything from the beginning pretty much like they wish to have it. They haven't had as much change.
Are their clothing, is that
the same? They have a very plain dress and clothing.
Do they have cars? Or?
No. They do use trucks. Now, the Hutterites have one different principle than the Amish. They do accept modern conveniences, but they're used by the whole community. No individual owns these things. They're just bought and used for the whole community. And the individual doesn't go to town or shopping or anything unless it's some emergency the individual would need to. The community does all that, and so they don't have need of the conveyance. But
Were they Anabaptists?
Yes.
Their religious beliefs are fairly
similar. Their Bible practices and their understanding of the practices are about identical with the Amish and the Mennonites. But I said a while ago that the Amish have changed more than the Hutterites, and I don't know if that's true or not, because the Amish haven't changed much either. There's some that are in between the old Amish and the Mennonites. And there's some old Mennonites that are as old-fashioned as the Amish. And a small group of Mennonites, you know. So
I guess it's like the old German Baptist Church. There's
several
different degrees, I guess. And I guess it gets really confusing when you try to sort it all out as to who split from who. Now, in the German Baptist Church, then, the first, when everyone came over to America, there was a division in 1881. Could you tell me about that? What the divisions were and why? Why did they split at that time?
Well, I have a paper that would give a lot of that, written by a young man in a Bible seminary. But I'll try to sum up some of it, I guess.
Just briefly, it doesn't have to be too detailed or anything.
Well, you see, in the following the Revolutionary War in the 1870s, our brothers began leaving and going to the frontier. They went from the eastern Pennsylvania down through Virginia, Maryland and Virginia, settled in Virginia. Then, and the things were a little primitive then in Virginia, but it was being settled as far as our doctrines were concerned. Why, they were pretty primitive. The brethren worshiped in homes yet down there. They didn't have meeting houses built. They had started to build meeting houses in some of this I had given in this. They started to build meeting houses in eastern Pennsylvania. Well, then they come out from Virginia to Ohio and Indiana and on west. And there also was a few brethren came through Pittsburgh, through western Pennsylvania and down the river, out through this way. And they went on through Kentucky, Tennessee, and on to Missouri. And some of them going up to Illinois. But for a good many years, from 1800 on, why, our religious life and our life, total life, was rather simple. And the brethren was satisfied with that. Well, then along in the 1850s and 60s, the Industrial Revolution and higher education, and brethren begin getting more schooling, why, they become dissatisfied with the simple life and the simple understanding of the Bible. And some wanted to pattern after the other denominations, which had higher schools and trained ministry. And we just had a free, unpaid ministry. The brethren did before that, and So there was a number of changes, and also some chief were beginning to have revivals in Sunday schools, and well, the more progressive among we brethren felt that was an important thing, and they wished we had it. And that those ideas met resistance in our church to start with. The annual conference dealt with those ideas and recommended to stay away from the fast things. But, of course, the influence got stronger for those things, and then the Brotherhood began to divide into different camps. The ones who pushed hardest for change were nicknamed progressives. I guess not only nickname, that would really be the name they should have. Then the ones who didn't want to see any change were called the old orders. And the ones who wanted to preserve the old order, but at the same time allow a moderate change, were called the conservatives. So from until 1880, why these three different groups tried to persuade annual conference to go one of three ways, you see. Mm-hmm. So when 1881 came, why, prior to 1881, the old orders were talking about expelling the progressives. And that's what they hoped to do, so that the church would be purified. But in 1881, they decided to withdraw from the church. And in the process of withdrawing, why, the largest group, which was the conservatives, took matters in hand to expel of the old orders as disobedient members. So I'm not sure whether you would say we withdrew from the church or whether we were expelled from the church. It was a little of each. Mm-hmm. Our intentions were to leave the church and to keep a small church on the old principles. But they ended up by expelling the ones that were radicals, they called them, us. So it's a little of each.
So, in other words, you were part of the progressive.
No,
you were part of the old order, and you were considered to be radical.
Radical for the old order, wanting to, annual meeting, outlaw the changes that annual meeting had tolerated. You see, you wanted annual meeting to outlaw it and go back to the old order. And now that's what the group wanted to do. I don't know myself how I feel. I'd have to think it all over again. So I live a long ways down the line.
That was where your ancestors stood, though, as far as your family goes?
Yes. Yeah. They would stand with the old orders in 1881. Okay. Now then, in 1882, why, the annual conference, which was the largest, or conservatives, they called them, dealt with the question of the progressives in their group. And they were radicals. They wanted to change right now. They wanted to throw away the uniform garb that we wear and everything. That a lot of the things, anyway, that that they called mere tradition. They did want to stay by all the principles that were founded in the Bible. They wanted to stay by those. But they had another difference. They didn't place as much emphasis on the annual conference and its principles as the rest of the Brotherhood did. They wanted to have a congregational type of church where each congregation made its own rules and didn't answer to a central authority like the rest of the Brotherhood did. So that was the main difference they had. But they wanted the changes to occur right now, so they were radical. And the annual meeting that year, the year after we were expelled, why, they expelled them.
So that was the three divisions then.
Yes, that made the three divisions. We were the smallest group of four.
Meaning
that,
that mainly in Ohio or?
Well, the largest number of them were found here in the Miami Valley of Ohio. Uh-huh. There was some in Pennsylvania. We had some in a good many different states, but now today, where those members lived in states that were very few in number, they have moved or died out, and we're only in about 13 states today.
Mm-hmm. But
we have a good many in California. Since about 1900, those churches have grown out there in California.
Has that mainly been from people converting or people moving out there?
Well, there have been, it began with people moving, and of course people have continued to move, but the California churches have done more, I think, than other churches to keep the young interested in the church and to interest outsiders mm-hmm. into the church. They've been a little more progressive or industrious along those lines than the rest of us. We've tried more just to keep the particularities and so on, and that maybe isn't the most encouraging to other people sometimes to want to join the church.
If people are interested in mm-hmm.
it. Yes, there is a change though quite a bit. Some of our bigger churches are a little more liberal or tolerant, you might say.
How would you think the Covington Church stands as far as?
Well, some say the Covington Church has a reputation for being too liberal, and I can't see that. I live right in it, and I can't see that. And so I suspect that what some people say about the California churches being too liberal might not seem that way to me if I lived there. It's just other people can be critical when they're off in the distance, you know.
After those divisions in the 1880s, when was next split?
Among the old orders, you mean, or
yeah.
Which group? Well, in 1913 we had a division. That wasn't a very large group. There was 15 ministers, or 15 officials. I'm not sure that was 15 ministers. We had deacons too. And there wasn't so many lay members that went along with that movement, but it has persisted down to today, and that group in 1930 had a split themselves, and one group still uses a horse and buggy. Now, they don't live here, but that horse and buggy group lives in Indiana, around Camden, Indiana.
What was the split over in 1913?
Well, they call it the telephone. Back in the 1890s, well, they started to have the question up whether or not the brethren should use the telephone. Well, some didn't want it, didn't think that we ought to have it, and the rest just didn't know. There wasn't anybody in particular that wanted it except some individual members. Of course, that's what kept bringing the question up, whether the individual members should be allowed to have such a worldly, unnecessary toy like that. At that time, it didn't seem a necessity. So, along each or every so many years, the question of the telephone would come up again. But the people who were bringing it up would also bring up the question of the authority of the church. Whether the church rules are obligatory and should be applied to everybody, or whether they are just advice, and the local churches can apply them as they feel. And I like to say that division come because of that, instead of just the telephone merely. But you'll find that when 1913 came, an annual conference said that it would be all right to use the telephone, it was a utilitary thing. Why, that's when the ultra-conservative, I call them, because they were were a conservative group, and they were more conservative than the big group. They decided that they wouldn't put up with it anymore, that they couldn't go along with a church that was getting worldly. And a church that refused to make every rule that they had binding on everybody. The church didn't feel to do that because these were matters that you don't find no scripture for. And they felt that would be going too far. They just felt like to use persuasion on the members about things that that most of the members felt weren't appropriate, and about things that the members felt that maybe were all right. Why the church wanted to use forbearance, but the small group couldn't see that. Mm-hmm. So that's.
Well, now was that in Ohio when it happened, or was that mainly in churches all over the country?
They had a few members in several states. The most were found in Indiana.
Uh-huh.
And then about 2 years after that, in 1915, there was a small group of people in California that joined this group in Indiana on the same issues. So today they number about 80 people.
What do they call themselves?
Well, they call themselves the Old Brethren.
Old Brethren.
Mm-hmm. Now that's the group that has the automobile. Uh-huh. The group that split off from them in 1930 that has the horse and buggies, they'd have about 40 members. And they just live in the one vicinity around Camden, Indiana. They have a meeting house there. Several ministers. Well, there's a few live around Goshen, Indiana.
Do your parents or grandparents, did they ever talk about it to you about that?
Well, I didn't hear much except that I asked questions about it since I've lived in this area. I've wanted to learn more about it. And I've learned a few things about it. I'm still trying to learn more. Once in a while I meet a man and I should have met a couple of years ago, but he knows a lot, you know. And I have a man now I should go see whenever I get time, because he was one of them for a while, till he come back with our church.
Well, now, what exactly happened in 1921?
Well, you see, following 1913, there was a small number of people in our church that still weren't happy. They were sympathetic with the people of 1913, but they didn't feel that they should break away from the church then. And as time went on, this same issue of church authority and how binding ought the decisions of the church was brought up occasionally at annual conference. And along with it, the church was faced with new things. One of them was the automobile, whether or not it was proper for members to have automobiles. At the first, it didn't seem any necessity in having one. So the church disapproved of automobiles. And of course, the ultra-conservatives, well, that satisfied them. But then the church began to consider, and it seemed as though an automobile or a truck was a necessity. And the annual conference then, for a little while, granted only a truck, because it looked like a brother would be using that for his business, for his work and his livelihood, and wouldn't be running here and there and tempted to go to shows and stuff like that. So that was the idea, not to make life hard for a person, but to make sin a little less difficult to come by. Now that's the idea behind it, you might say. Well, then in 1921, the church says automobiles can be permitted to brethren, providing the brethren buy a plain one, and not one that's showy and fancy and expensive. Inexpensive and plain, colored, is what they wanted. So, at that time, while this group that wanted to see things held back and didn't want to see changes come, why they decided to break away. No, that isn't what happened. They sent another petition to annual conference. They had sent several, so they sent another petition to annual conference asking that the old rules be reaffirmed and the innovations be put away again, you see. Well, the annual conference sent a committee here of brethren to Covington. The Covington area church is sent this petition. And so they sent a committee here to discuss with them. And what a committee is like a court. They come and they listen to all that's said, and then they render a decision. That's what a committee from annual conference is. Mm-hmm. Well, they disfellowshipped or put out of the church those members here who refused to recognize annual conference. Annual conference had said that automobiles will be permitted, and these members here says we'll not accept that. We refuse to accept that. So the committee says, well, we'll not consider you members. So that left most of this church here out of fellowship with the Brotherhood, except a small group. And then all the ministry and all the officials here went with the ultra-conservative group here, and they retained the horse and buggy.
Was your family part of the ultra-conservative group?
No, no, my family wasn't. Mm-hmm. Of course, we lived in Pennsylvania. Now, just a moment. My wife's father and mother came from Virginia, but some of her uncles here were involved in it and were part of the horse and buggy group. Now, what happened was that within 9 years, a good number of them, including a good number of the ministers of those ultra-conservatives, changed their mind and came back to our church again. And that made it rather difficult on the little group here of horse and buggy people, because they had to re-elect their own ministers and try to make a go of it without their leaders, because their leaders were changing their mind again and coming back, you see.
Uh-huh. About
1930. There was 30 or 31 people at one time was taken back into the congregation of German Baptists, old German Baptists here, because they had decided they. And I lately learned at least one reason. I talked to one of the men who for a while was with the horse and buggy group and then came back in 1930. He said that the big problem following 1921 was how plain and how strict should they be, and they disagreed over that, and they couldn't come to agreement. And for 9 years, that little group struggled with how plain they should be and what they should allow or shouldn't allow. And he says, since they couldn't come to an agreement, it made about 30 of them feel dissatisfied, and they wanted to get with a group that had better agreement among themselves. And that's one reason, at least, why some of them came back.
So how big is the group now?
Well, around here it's about 60 members.
Uh-huh.
They've had a few baptisms lately. They're probably a little more than that.
Uh-huh. Well, what do they call themselves?
They call themselves the Old Order German Baptist Brethren.
And your church is the?
The Old German Baptist Brethren.
Okay, so they just put the name order in there,
and that's the way to distinguish them. Now, of course, we're called Old Orders, and the outsider calls all of us, any one of us, the Old Orders. I mean, we're, and he, but their official name is Old Order German Baptist Brethren.
And they have about 60 members.
Yeah, I would say about 60. About 4 years ago, I had the name of every one of them written down in here. I got it from my lady over here. But now there's just been a few that have come back to our church, and then they've had a few baptisms, so I don't know what the number stands.
Are there very many younger people?
Well, no, because the group is small. They don't have many younger people.
Mm-hmm.
But it's surprising to me that I have been to their meetings lately. I've seen some young people who aren't married that are members of the church. They seem to be, they seem to find it a satisfying life. They don't seem to find it too difficult, at least at present, to live with horses and horse and buggy.
No.
They do use transportation renting it or getting rides with neighbors and friends and things like that. In emergencies especially, that's right, they can't own it.
What about tractors?
They have tractors. At first, the church approved only of tractors without rubber tires. And then, I think now at present, well, I know, that at present they allow rubber tires. And that made a few of them feel very unhappy when their church allowed rubber tires over the other. That sounds kind of funny why they would make an issue over the kind of wheels on a tractor, but if you would visit with them, you'd readily see why it is that the steel-tired tractor is used in the field. You don't see a steel-tired tractor on the road. And they didn't want to make it easy for a brother to get into town, to come in contact with worldly life and go places he shouldn't.
I see.
That's what. But then they've decided that the brother needs to go to the feed mill and he needs to haul his produce to town. So they've allowed the rubber tire.
I see. When was that?
I can't tell you right off. It's been within the last 15 years, probably, or 20, that uh-huh. they've allowed the rubber tire. I have some of that information down, but I don't remember.
Well, is there any other difference besides the horse and buggy issue that they're different from your church? Are they more conservative in other ways, too?
Well, no. Their dress is a little more old-fashioned. Ours has been modified somewhat from what it used to be.
How is that?
Well, the bonnets are bigger, the dresses are longer, almost to the ground, not quite, but almost, and I'm not too good on dress. My wife, and she can pick out the little things that I can't see.
Mm-hmm. What about any kind of convenience in the home? Do they?
Well, they're pretty much like the Amish. They don't have electricity, mm-hmm. and they do allow appliances run with gasoline motor, stationary motors, and so therefore I think they're going to have power mowers to mow their yard, and they don't have they still use oil lamps. They had the question up several times whether they could permit gas lamps. And the church, I think, was undecided a while on that, and a few of the members got gas lamps. Then the question came up again, and the church disapproved of it. So that put these that had gas lamps in a problem, and one of those families came with our church. They decided that the church was being too picayunish, they felt.
Do they have like an annual meeting, or is it just that one group?
Well,
and they have an annual meeting among themselves.
They have
members.
An annual meeting among themselves. Mm-hmm. Now, today, they used to have some members in California and just a few in Indiana, but today they're located right around here. The largest group is at Covington, and I think the second largest would be at Arcanum over here, and about the third largest would be over around Gettysburg over here, and they call that the Bradford Church, and that's the Arcanum Church over there, and this is the Painter Creek, and this is the Covington Church over here. Now over at Bradford or Gettysburg, they don't have any meeting house. They do these other two places. Now back when they were organized, they had a meeting house down south of Englewood, Ohio, south and east, over around Clayton. But now it's a dwelling, and no members live down in that area.
As far as religious belief goes, though, are they...
It's identical to us.
Exactly mm-hmm. the same. Mm-hmm. Even the love feasts and everything is exactly the
everything.
Same.
Everything.
So it's mainly just on the acceptance of worldly
that's
things
right.
and where you're going to go along.
That's the only thing. And likewise with the group from the First Division. Now, since 1913, that group lays less emphasis on the annual conference and its decisions than what they did when they were started. Mm-hmm. At the start, they felt that was very important because they wanted the church to make every rule binding on everybody. But there's something happened in that group. Now, I'm not talking about the whole group. I'm talking about the one who allow automobiles and in lots of ways, I think, are the nearest in all respects to us in their acceptance of the worldly, of modern conveniences and everything. But they have changed their outlook on the annual conference from what they were in the beginning. Mm-hmm. But we have some variety of views among us on that. Some wanted to think it's more binding than others. So although I think among us there's a tendency to get along and not to think that one particular view has to prevail over all the others.
Mm-hmm. Now, some of the things that are perhaps restrictions, perhaps not, as far as the church goes, have automobiles. It's still inexpensive plane.
That's the that's on the rules.
Right.
But then, and not in practice. I mean, some have
really
expensive, and some have colorful ones. But then, I would say the largest majority have plain automobiles and inexpensive ones yet, like the rules call for.
If you can find an expensive automobile nowadays.
Now you see, you asked about Covington here, what it was, what kind of a district it would be, conservative or liberal. Mm-hmm. Well, here you might find a few having automobiles a little more colorful, and there are some churches around that they wouldn't allow any of their members to have it. They would admonish them and tell them to change it, you know.
Uh-huh.
A few of the smaller churches.
What would happen if someone did something that, you know, the church disapproved of? Then they would just tell them to change it, and if not, they would be expelled?
Well, it depends. Now, here in this church here, they would maybe admonish them a long time. And depending on the matter, maybe the church never would expel them. But yet, it depended on what the matter was, mm-hmm. how serious a matter they felt it was. And there might be some other churches that within a few weeks or just a few months would go all the way from the first admonishment to expulsion. You know, feel like the member was stubborn and disobedient and not willing to want to even compromise or anything. That's the way they would feel about it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a difference in approaches to applying the discipline of the church.
Uh-huh. What about movies? Anything like entertainment?
No, we don't go to any shows. Even if you call it a purely family, a comedy, or whatever, the young members who, or young people who are not members, have more liberty that way. That generally they have their own cars. But even then, their parents would rather their children did something else than go to movies. Mm-hmm. Other kinds of entertainment, but then
parents
don't always
have
that.
What kinds of entertainments would they be? County fairs? Or?
Well, no. Now, a lot of what you would call in the line of sports is acceptable.
Uh-huh. Even for members?
Well, no. Now, the sports, you see, can be looked on in different ways. If you're looking on it for exercise and pure entertainment and not so much as competition, why, the members play ball and games that way, but they'll do it themselves and on a backyard lot or somewhere. They won't go to the schools and so on, you know. Although I do know where groups of members have played basketball where they'd rent a gymnasium or have the use of something like that, but that would be at certain stated times when only they had access to the building. They disapprove of members going to the public.
Mm-hmm. Any other kinds of entertainments that How about, well, I'm thinking, are there any kind of social gatherings for the young people in the church, or is that just at Love Feast time?
Well, the Love Feast time is a big and a main time that a lot of the young people get together. Although we have other times that the young people can get together just as often as they wish, as often as somebody will be a host and open their doors or provide a place for the young people to get together and things for the young people to do.
Sometimes, here
in Covington, I think it was last summer, the summer before, I don't know how they're doing this year, the young people got together about once a week, I think it was. And they had a ball game, and they had a volleyball and some of those type of games, maybe a badminton, things like that. And the young people, though, do a lot of just talking, just visit and talk, stand around and talk. That's better than sitting in cars. Some do that too. They'd rather they come out and talk, you know.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. Now, your church still does not have radio or TV.
No. I would say that that is the rule, and most all the members abide by it. But I can't name a person who doesn't, but there may be some that don't. Now, I've heard some people say there's a few that have, or they know of somebody that does. Well, I don't myself. But then I would say that's about 100% agreed on by most of our members, that, that it's just a form of entertainment. It's not best for spirituality. So they are willing to abide by that.
Mm-hmm. Now, when church members get together, I know Dr. Miller was saying sometimes they get together and have singings.
Mm-hmm.
How often do you do that?
Well, now in this locality here, for several winters, you see, winter is a good time to get together for singings. When there's a family, then about every other week would open a big basement up to singings. And members and children and friends are all invited. We usually have the members turn out good, and the young people don't turn out so good, because what we sing is hymns, and we don't just use our own little book. We use a hymnal with notes in it, and we use several different books with the popular gospel songs in some of them. But there are a few young folks that are good singers and love to sing, and they come. But the others like better entertainment. And they'll go to the shows or something like that. I mean, some others.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there's no restriction on education at all, or is there a...
No, I don't think you would say today that there is. Back some years ago, they would disapprove more of that. Now, usually, when a boy goes to school beyond high school, why, people question and wonder what he's studying for, what kind of a profession or trade he's going to follow. And the reason they ask that question is, if they heard of a young boy going to school and he wouldn't have any idea what he wanted to be, only just get some more education, they wouldn't think that was a good reason for going to school. But if a boy or a girl is going on to school beyond high school and have their a goal set, of course, if they're a church, why, the goal then would ought to be acceptable too. I knew a young man that loved art, and he was a good artist, and so he went to art school, and while he was never forbidden that, why, a number of people where he lived didn't feel that was a worthy goal. But he also learned and qualified himself to teach English, and he could do either. He could teach art or English, and today he's teaching in a high school. I'm not sure which he's teaching, whether it's English or art, but if he had given as his goal English to start with, or something like that, that would have been more acceptable than art. Art looks effeminate and kind of really unnecessary, and maybe people have other reasons too. Maybe the only art they're acquainted with in magazines is something that seems unchristian to some people. And
are there any restrictions on magazines or?
No, we expect members to sort of apply the rule there like they would. We don't expect them, of course, to choose the best programs on radio, because we don't have radio. But then there are Christians who permit radio and television, and they say that the way we do is we screen and we eliminate the objectionable things for the Christian. And well, that's the principle we would apply, and let the individual do that in his reading matter. Mm-hmm. He ought to subscribe to the magazines that are wholesome. Mm-hmm. That'd be our principle. Although I don't think we have anything written on the rules or of our church about that. It's just that that's what most members that you come in contact, I think, would say.
What about occupations? Are there any occupations that are, besides something like art,
that would be objectionable,
that,
you mean?
Would be objectionable.
Well, let's see. Yes, I imagine there would be. All right. Now, we have doctors and nurses and anything to do with the building trades, or mm-hmm. Now you see, if someone wanted to be an architect or let's see, I ought to think of things that's objectionable.
Well, I know probably being a lawyer or a judge.
That'd be difficult. Anything that would require us to obligate ourselves to the state, uh-huh, in any way, that would be, at the present time at least, I'll say, would be objectionable. Now, I suppose the day will come when the first lawyer among us will claim that all he's doing is processing wills and, you know, things like that, not taking criminal cases and stuff like that. I don't know. There's probably a lot of difference in the work that a lawyer can do. And that's a way a few of our occupations today, I think, have come where once they were objectionable, they found out that a Christian can work in those things and eliminate the objectionable features.
Mm-hmm.
And
what about,
may come likewise with law.
What about occupations for women? What mainly do the sisters go into, nursing? Or?
Well, the most of them still go in for raising families. But,
right. Well, say if they were not married or before they were married. Or?
Well, a lot of them get some training in high school for office work, and then some start out for medicine, you know, and decide to be a nurse. There's none yet have decided to be a doctor, but then an MD, but then I'd probably come. Someone asked me once why there seemed to be so many in our small group that favored professions in the medical field. I suppose that was one of the first that opened up outside of farming for us, and seemed fully acceptable to our people. And therefore, I think you'll find that most who went into that field knew someone else who did, and it encouraged them to do it too, you see. So I think because that happened to be the first, why, and it was fully acceptable. Now, my father says the reason that we didn't have any doctors before about late 30s or 1940s was because of the college education and training it took, medical training and so on, to become a doctor. Back in before that time, why we were just against higher education altogether. And then...
Was there any restriction on how far you could go in education then?
Or? Well, there was a time when a good many... When most of us didn't finish high school.
No,
we would quit after the second year or so in high school.
What about the old order German Baptist?
The petitioner here?
Yeah.
Now, we call them the petitioner, too, because they brought a petition to the meeting. As that's the nickname, I guess. They don't like to call them that, but everybody does call them that. You know, I'm not sure where they stand on that. I feel like that if it were an easy matter for them to have their children discontinue school and help their folks on the farm, I think that's what they'd prefer. We had a problem here once and went through the courts with one of those families. That's been a few years ago. Now, I doubt if the other families here would want to carry it that far through the courts again on something like that. I imagine that they would try to seek some exemption. Now, among them and also among a number of our people is to have the children drop out of school and finish by correspondence. Used to be a correspondence diploma wasn't recognized as well as it is today. And public schools are more willing to let children discontinue public school and to finish by correspondence than what they once were. At least where this is being done, the school cooperates even to leaving them get a diploma from the local school. And now, I did that very thing. I quit high school, not from religious scruple, but just because I didn't want to, I was a dropout. And but then I wasn't out but a year and decided I wished I hadn't. So I enrolled with American School in Chicago and got my diploma through them. But I never, my local school just wouldn't recognize that at all in Pennsylvania. And that was 1947. But now today, there's a number of young people right here in Covington that have done it. Several have gotten their diploma in school.
Do you feel that the schools here, since there is quite a large group of you, do you think that they are doing a good job as far as educating
the public school,
young
you mean?
Without getting too much of a bad influence into their lives?
Well, I think so. It seems like that, from what I can understand, I think the young people who don't want to participate in things they feel are objectionable in school are permitted exemption from that by the schools.
That's good.
I believe they are. But, you know, there's some young people that are mixed up. They're not sure what they want. Their parents want one thing, and their schoolmates and the teachers want something else. And so that poses a problem with them. Now.